Alrighty. Next item, Jody.
Item number four is our administrative update. This item is informational.
Good morning, members of the mental health board. It's a little gloomy out, so we're going to try to do our best to keep things upbeat and moving right along. As always, my administrator's report was submitted some time ago so that we could get the packets out early. So I can, you have what I presented, but I will give you the latest and greatest. The first item is our systems improvement agreement. So we did have a survey. We had the first of our two expected full CMS surveys. They sent eight people in their survey team, which is the biggest team I've ever seen, and I think anyone here had ever seen. And so that was a little bit of a surprise. We did have a pretty serious plan in place. It's still on my desk because you never know when they're going to come back again. But I have my survey response team and my whole plan. So even though they sent eight people, we were ready, and we had essentially someone to shadow each surveyor. The bottom line is the surveyors were here for 3 days. They made an enormously detailed assessment of our building and our processes. We had more than 250 items in our corrective action plans. Of course, they had an open book test as they surveyed us. In the end, they did note some relatively minor deficiencies. We had some life safety things identified. The life safety fixes, though, amounted to less than $20,000. The two major items were, we have a lot of stuff stored on closed units. Even though those units are closed and locked and unavailable to really anybody, the unit is still part of the hospital. So because we had items stored in patient rooms, those rooms require automatic door closers. So those doors lock if they're not open. So we had to make an investment. It was about $8,000 in door closers and installers, which seems ridiculous, I realize, but the cost of moving everything and storing everything in the short time we had to come up with a corrective action plan just didn't make sense. So yes, we invested $8,000 in door closers. We're hoping to have the mother of all rummage sales at someday soon, and maybe we can get something back for those. The door closers that work on our doors were actually in quite short supply. Hats off to our team here, because there was something like 50 of them available in like the country, and we were able to get all of ours that we needed to be successful. The other issues were noted. We had a couple of fire doors that when they close, all the hospital has doors that close when the fire alarms go off. A couple of those doors didn't latch. And then there were some penetrations in the walls that needed to be sealed. This is what happens when the telecom folks come in and they drill holes in our walls and they do not adequately seal them. So every single thing that was brought up in the survey has been addressed. We actually addressed some things that didn't make it into the final survey findings, but since they were mentioned and they were identified as life safety issues, we just went ahead and fixed them. Again, these were all relatively inexpensive fixes, but any life safety citation can be a condition level finding. So we had to make sure that we don't have subsequent condition level findings. The plan of correction will be submitted, I believe, today for those initial findings. And we will have a follow-up confirmation survey, which will be a very brief confirmation survey. And then we will basically be waiting for our final survey, which would, if successful, we would close the SIA, and we would be have completed this project by the due date of December 30th. We anticipate that a confirmation survey will happen in the next 2 weeks. And once that's completed, we would expect another surprise survey, although it won't be much of a surprise given that it has to happen between like November 16th and December 16th in order to complete it in time for the contract. So I will leave you with, I just a shout out to the BHD team. It's too many people to name, but it's a huge group of folks that put in enormous amounts of time and effort. A shout out to Glenn Krasker and his team from CMS. They really helped us come up with a game plan that was successful. I'm going to loosely quote Mr. Krasker, who told me that he couldn't imagine that our survey could have gone any better. And that was really music to my ears. Again, this is almost 2 years of effort to try to do this thing. And you know, I've said it a couple of times, but just, I mean, an SIA is a huge challenge for any institution. But to do it in an institution where everybody knows we'll be closing soon and during a global pandemic just made this seemingly impossible. And really, a group of really dedicated, mission-aligned folks really achieved what could have been impossible. And so I can't say enough about the team. We killed it. We did great. We're not going to celebrate. We're not going to spray champagne around or anything yet because this is just another step. But all things point to a successful navigation of the SIA, and we just continue to do our best and continue our daily audits. We gave everybody a day to celebrate, and then we went right back to what we were doing as far as making sure that everything is on track and being done. So great reason to celebrate, although that celebration will be muted until we achieve the goal of becoming 100% compliant with the conditions of participation and successfully ending this chapter in BHD history. So.
Yes, applause.
Thank you. Yes. And again, the team is just so amazing. And we had some people depart and the people that stepped in, just like a great baseball team, we had people step up and fill positions and be the next person up and really didn't miss a beat as evidenced by the findings. Unless there are questions, I'll move on. The Mental Health Emergency Center, I guess the biggest news is if you have driven by it recently, there's a building there. And the building has a roof and walls and all kinds of stuff. So really, really fast progression there. Pretty amazing. The Advocate Aurora did join BHD's Town Hall on October 14th. The idea here was to just give an overview to all of our staff, kind of let them know what's coming on, trying to really over-communicate about the process. And then we do have a Town Hall scheduled in the coming days. More targeted for the clinical staff that could possibly work at the Mental Health Emergency Center. And that is, it's at 4 o'clock, I want to say in 2 weeks. And that we tried to schedule it right around a shift change so more people could participate. It will be probably available virtually, but some of those staff also have been engaged individually. Additionally, the Mental Health Emergency Center has announced their new administrator, Kevin Klusner, who's formerly of St. Joe's. So Mr. Klusner comes to us with a lot of experience serving our Milwaukee population on the north side and really is an awesome addition because he knows our community. He's connected to community interest groups on the north side and has, this isn't his first show as far as working in an emergency room in Milwaukee. So we're thrilled to see him. He's another great addition to our team. How hiring continues, positions are posted. They're in the process of trying to recruit physicians, a chief medical officer and a chief nursing officer. And the board members, including myself and Dr. Perez, have been kept in the loop around operational and recruitment efforts or whatnot. All things point to being on track for a spring open. So we're all very excited again. The building just moves up. If you, Dr. Stevens, if you drive to like 12th and Valete and head north, you can see the Mental Health Emergency Center. It can also be seen from the freeway. When you're driving north on 43 and you see that Lion and Kugel's Brewery on your right, the Mental Health Emergency Center is the new building with the slanted roof on the left on top of the hill.
Okay, thanks. I was just looking from Walnut. I was thinking from Walnut, I can't see it though, right?
Oh, it may be blocked or it's sort of oriented the other way.
But,
yeah. Right, it's simply amazing. since the last beam ceremony, the progress, I mean, at that ceremony, essentially there were no walls and no floors. It is now completely enclosed. And it's just, I'm still amazed how fast they can get something done. And then finally, a couple of employee issues related to BHD. So there is an administrative order from the county executive requiring all staff and contractors working at BHD to be vaccinated. The proof of vaccination was required by October 1st. We are working through this challenge, as you know, and you've probably all seen in the news, vaccine mandates are challenging for healthcare organizations. We are in the 90% of compliance or so. We do have a number of staff with granted medical or religious exemptions. With our contractors, it was a challenge for some of our contractors to be in compliance. But we're following the guidance from the county exec's office and working very closely with Steve Garadetsky and others. Each contractor who provides a vital service at BHD, who is not vaccinated, has an individual plan that I presented as sort of an interim or a transitional period, where if they aren't vaccinated, they must provide documentation of weekly testing, they must wear an N95 in the building, and we're doing everything we can to limit the contact of unvaccinated providers with our clients. The goal is to get 100% vaccination as soon as possible. And again, we're working very closely to help work with staff who have vaccine hesitancy and to make sure that we achieve that goal. Again, it's a bit of a challenge. People have very strong feelings. Unfortunately, politics has really been sprinkled into this whole issue. Just for perspective, we've been 100% compliant in our flu vaccines for many years. And so we would expect the same for the COVID vaccines. But again, it's an ongoing thing. It's a challenge. We were working with our individual staff, and we're doing our best to be as accommodating and understanding and supportive as possible, while putting, you know, at the forefront the safety of those vulnerable patients that we serve, many of whom don't have a choice to be here. So I think that's what really sets us apart here, is our customers don't really have a choice sometimes. And so they have the right to be safe and protected from COVID-19. And a big part of that protection is vaccination, you know, based on the best medical information we have today. So the other piece to the employee puzzle here is, it's no secret that we've lost some staff, that staffing is a challenge. The universe of healthcare is extremely strapped right now. There's a challenge on nursing, there's a challenge on all clinical and professional staff. We've been using temporary staff and traveler staff through Allegis, which is a contract that represents a large group of temporary staff providers. Basically, the pipeline for temp staff has dried up. While we do occasionally still get some new staff, it really was getting to be a challenge. The rates for RNs have gotten into like the $150 an hour range, which is completely unsustainable. So we worked with HR and the team to give all of our hospital staff who really keep the place running, all of our clinical staff, and a raise. So effective October 4th, many of our first shift inpatient staff got a $5 an hour shift bonus. Second shift got an $8 an hour bonus, and $10 an hour went to the third shift. And we also raised our critical fill bonus to $250 for shift. The idea here was it didn't make sense to pay huge premiums for temp staff who are not invested in Mission Align, when we could reward our dedicated staff who've stuck with us and are here for the duration. And so we tried to channel those funds into maintenance and keeping our own staff. And you know, that is something we were happy to do, frankly, in that it definitely rewarded them for their hard work and dedication. And the goal here is to maintain enough staff through the closure. A final note on that is we're working very closely with Granite Hills and CEO Jen Bergerson about a thoughtful and planned transition for care, so that we have enough staff to complete our work. And as Jen and her new hospital rolls up and expands, that some of those staff have a path to that new facility to keep them in service and in their mission aligned roles, just with the new provider. And so this is really tricky, as you can imagine, but you know, our great relationship with Jen and her dedication to the people we serve really shines here, because she recognizes that she's going to need lots of our team on her team to be successful. But she also realizes she can't pillage our staff quite yet. And so we've been really cautious and thoughtful about, she has taken a few key staff, but we've been able to overcome those losses. But she's mindful that her initial unit, which should be open soon, probably won't involve many BHD staff. But once she is able to ramp up and become a larger organization, and when she gets to that 24-bed unit and 48-bed units, that we will be able to dial back our service, and many of those staff will be able to transition over to Granite Hills and continue to be part of this treatment continuum of care that includes inpatient service. So that's all I have. Unless there are questions for me, that concludes my administrator's report, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mike. I'd like to invite board members to ask any questions of Mike.
I have a question.
Rachel.
Mike, I really want to thank you for all this material on the vaccine mandate for Milwaukee County. I think it's going to be very helpful. My question is, does BHD have any recommendation for entirely community-based organizations on the basis of what you've done
Our policies and procedures really were developed to align with the county and the county efforts. There is a really large group of folks working on this every day. If Dr. Schneider or Linda wants to comment, I will give you my opinion. I think it's a challenge to get past some of the vaccine hesitancy. And I think the key is to not be judgmental or, you know, again, people have the right to make those decisions. I think the other thing is there are steps you can take to keep people safe, including sort of the social distancing, masking, and all sorts of things. For us, it felt like, and I believe that the direction was that for a key and high risk venues like BHD, the House of Correction, and the Youth Detention Center, we just couldn't compromise on vaccine compliance. I think there are venues where you could have a more dialectic approach, again, focusing on, you know, health and safety and those other mitigations that can be done. You know, we've been very successful in not having patient to staff to patient, or patient to patient transmission of COVID-19 really since the beginning of the pandemic, based on cleaning, masking, social distancing, and the like. And so it can be done. And so my guidance there would be just those things can be done relatively inexpensively. And really, it's a good habit for everyone to get into anyway. Wash your hands a lot, use hand sanitizer, that sort of thing. So I think that's my feedback, is that the community agencies, you know, 100% compliance just might not be realistic for some people. But then, you know, putting in place those other measures that keep people safe probably is the next best thing to do.
I absolutely agree with all of that. I have a very specific question then. As the head of BHD, which is a funder of Grand Avenue Club, what would your response be to our saying, we have used persuasion fairly effectively, but we have some people who absolutely refuse to get the vaccine. What would your reaction be if we said you must show proof of vaccination? That's where our hesitancy comes in, very strong hesitancy, and we don't have the precise answer about what to do about that.
So again, you're asking me for my personal opinion, which I'm happy to share. I think that would have to be a decision that you make in collaboration with your board. I think we have providers who've had requirements for vaccine mandates. Mm-hmm. I think the challenge is when you're providing like a Medicaid service or like an outpatient clinical service, you know, the way it works is you have to provide at least some sort of equivalent or service to someone who perhaps, you know, if you establish a clinic rule, for instance, that says you can't come into the clinic and get face-to-face therapy or med management or whatever, then you must provide a remote alternative or some sort of safe alternative. I think for a program like the clubhouse at the Grand Avenue Club, it's an awesome service and it's a very important service, but I think you have a little more latitude in that service doesn't have that same level of oversight in it, like an entitlement, like an outpatient clinic or a CCS service or CSP service. So I think it is within the realm of possibility. I don't believe that our funding would be contingent upon, you know, not having a vaccine mandate, especially since the county has required vaccine for all of our staff who serve in places like, you know, where people are congregating and who are vulnerable. I think you're in a position where your agency would is a venue where people would be potentially exposed to the virus. It's a congregate area, people hang out in groups. So, you know, I think that really is up to you and yours. I think my only encouragement would be coming up with some sort of way to keep connected with those participants who are electing for now not to be vaccinated, and recognizing that even here at BHD, we've seen some people come around and get vaccinated as they become more comfortable, as they learn more. Most vaccine hesitancy is based on misunderstandings about the virus, in my opinion, in my experience. And so I think that there's a lot of people have really legitimate fears that need to be assuaged. And I think continuing keeping them engaged versus making them outsiders is a key. And again, it might be a challenge, but finding a way to maintain that relationship, that positive relationship they've had, is really important. And I think that would be my guidance.
Thank you. Thanks.
Dr. Schneider, you have comment. Saw the hand up of Dr. Schneider. Dr. Schneider?
I'm going to speak as a physician on this. The COVID vaccine works. The COVID vaccine is safe. Despite that, there is a group of people who medically shouldn't or can't get vaccinated because of underlying medical conditions. Moreover, there is probably a very small group of people who truly morally have a true opposition. Christian Science Monitor is a whole a group of people who have long-standing known opposition to this. Even if you're going to have a vaccine mandate, you have to have some sort of accommodation. And most places are doing it by testing within 72 hours. Recently, I'm now the past president of the Wisconsin Psychiatric Association, but we had a live fall meeting that I was the program director for, and we had a vaccine requirement, but we also allowed people who weren't vaccinated could provide proof of PCR testing within 72 hours. So I think to Mike's point of providing alternate ways of similar service, you also have to find alternate ways to demonstrate your fear of virus if you're not vaccinated. Yeah. Because there is going to be a cohort of people for a lot of reasons that truly can't be vaccinated and are at risk. And quite often the people who can't be vaccinated are the ones most at risk.
Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Schneider. Anyone else have any thoughts or comments for Mike with his administrative update? All right.